Welcome to the Schneps Connects podcast. If you haven't yet subscribed to the podcast, please click that button to stay updated on my latest episodes. Today, I'm excited to be joined by Assemblymember Steve Stern, who serves New York's 10th District on Long Island. Since taking office in 2018, Assemblymember Stern has passed impactful laws on groundwater protection, veteran services, and children's health. He's the proud chairman of the Veterans Affairs Committee, and he's worked to improve veteran benefits and expand opportunities for service-disabled veteran-owned business enterprises. His efforts include securing funding for schools, law enforcement, and tackling climate change with key environmental legislation. He's also a proud advocate for gun safety, transportation funding, public health, and ending veteran homelessness. Assemblymember Stern is responsible for introducing effective initiatives such as the Silver Alert System and the Housing Our Homeless Heroes Act, among various others. Today, we'll discuss his work in the community and a few initiatives he's working on. So, Assemblymember Stern, I want to thank you for being here. I appreciate your time.
Josh, thank you. Thanks so much for having me. And of course, thank you and to your entire outstanding team at Schneps Media for literally 40 years of forming, entertaining, and educating Long Islanders.
Well, thank you. I mean, listen, I think making sure that our elected officials can communicate to our readers, our listeners, is really important. And I think, you know, for you, maybe just starting off sharing your story. I mean, I think one of the things I love to hear is just, you know, why did you and how did you get started in politics?
Yeah. So politics and government was always something that I was very interested in growing up, then in college, and then going to law school. And one of my very first experiences was working in the office of my local congressman on the Hill in Washington, D.C., and I'll never forget it. He gave me a choice. He said, you can come and work for me in my main office, and you can answer phones, and you could do some filing and, you know, hang out with, you know, the other young people in the office, and that'll be a really fun experience. Or you could come and work for me in my capacity as chairman of a committee. And that's where you get the real experience. That's where you will help coordinate congressional hearings and deal with some of the most important government affairs representatives in the country when they're coming to speak about, you know, making major impact and really getting an understanding of how government works and how many steps are involved. And I'll really ensure that you can come behind the scenes. And it was a fantastic experience. I went back to school and worked for a local senator when I was away at school in Louisiana to come home and become a young lawyer and do a lot of the kind of work that I do today. And you had run down, you know, some of the initiatives, some of the areas that I've been impactful in. I'm very proud of that. But that really does go back to that pivotal original experience of having worked for my local congressman and getting a feel for what it took in order to make real impact. And again, I think back to that experience. I talk about that experience often. I talk about it fondly. And when I meet with so many young people, you know, and from all walks of life, certainly those that I have the privilege to represent, and they ask me how I got started, I'll tell them that story and hope that it is inspirational to them to some extent. And I know that it has been.
And, you know, it sounds like you were quite fortunate to find your passion at an early age, because sometimes it takes a few of those to figure out what you really want to do.
Absolutely, particularly these days. But I was very, and consider myself to be very, very fortunate that from a relatively early age, I had a vision and had a path, followed it, and I continue to do that this day. I'm very blessed.
So, you know, I touched on some of your key initiatives and things that you're focused on, as well as, you know, certainly accomplishments. Is there a key accomplishment that you're most proud of?
There are a lot of initiatives that I am very proud of. And having served for six terms in the Suffolk County Legislature and now serving in my fourth term in the New York State Assembly, the list of accomplishments, quite frankly, is lengthy. And I'm proud of so many of our initiatives that have made real impact. But I think what I'm most proud of is what we do on a daily basis. I have a legislative staff that is literally second to none in any level of government, certainly within the Long Island region, and I would argue in the entire state of New York. And we make impact. We deal with so many of the most vulnerable in our community and those organizations that continuously on a daily basis work to protect some of the very most vulnerable in our neighborhoods. And so day in, day out, whether it is ensuring that there's access to much needed services and benefits, being out in the community and really, really knocking on doors and listening and delivering on some of the top priorities for my neighbors, for our community, for the Long Island region as a whole, that's really what I count as my greatest accomplishment. And look, where we add to it every single day. But at the end of the day, sure, we have a lengthy list of things that we're very, very proud of. And we'll talk about a few of those. But what I'm most proud of is how we serve our community and our constituency on a daily basis.
I liked what you said about the door knocking, you know, because I think sometimes elected officials, it can be difficult also when you're pulled up to Albany and, you know, national politics, going to DC, to be able to, you know, stay connected to your constituents. You know, sometimes that's forgotten by people, and they're typically the ones that don't stay in office. But it's nice to hear you say that. One of the things I think would be beneficial for people listening in, because it can be really confusing, is you represent the 10th district on Long Island. So could you just touch on the communities that serves?
Sure. So the 10th Assembly District, starting from the east, would be the eastern, approximately the eastern half of the town of Huntington. So areas like Greenlawn and Elwood and Huntington Station and Dix Hills and Melville and Cold Spring Harbor. That's the general area. And in the north, the boundary line is 25A and runs right through the village of Huntington. And then after our most recent redistricting, the 10th Assembly District now jumps over the Nassau County line to have parts of Woodbury down through Plainview and even a bit of Old Bethpage right up to about Bethpage Black.
Well, I have to say, those are terrific communities. You probably don't know this, but I grew up in Melville.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, that's my heart is in Melville, where I grew up and had a great childhood being raised in that community. So terrific communities that you serve.
Yep. Very, very blessed, very privileged. It is a diverse district and a lot of challenges for an awful lot of families, but a fantastic quality of life overall. And the door knock has always been very important to me, Josh. I have a personal rule, and I have since the very first campaign that I had run for the county legislature, you know, a few years ago now. I have to knock on no less than 3,500 doors every year, even in a non-election year.
That's great.
Probably double it or triple it in an election year. But to your point, that's how you stay connected. That's how I know what's going on in our neighborhoods. That's how we, number one, learn what the priorities are, learn what the needs are, and then be able to deliver on those needs, whether it's a state issue, a county, a town, or even a federal issue. Make sure that for me, my entire staff, it is our business to know what's going on in our neighborhoods and how we can be of assistance.
I know a big part of your platform is being an advocate in regards to the environment. I know Newsday did an in-depth, you know, profile on how some of the, you know, the water on Long Island was impacted by companies that had been on Long, not necessarily in your district, but it's a big issue. So I'd love for you to share, you know, the work that you've done to really protect Long Island's natural resources.
Yeah. And protecting our precious environment obviously is one of the top priorities for any Long Island representative, or it should be anyway, at every level of government. We know that we get our drinking water, for example, from a sole source aquifer literally right beneath our feet. And so it's critical to us in so many ways. So when it comes particularly to protecting the integrity of the water that we drink, major initiatives at the state level, when it comes to 1,4-dioxane or PFAS and some of these forever chemicals, sewer infrastructure, and to protect wastewater management, that's critically important for all of us, and the adoption of high-tech septic. I mean, we literally for decades and decades have been pumping some of the worst and most offensive chemicals, toxic, you know, substances into our drinking water source. And we've learned over many years now that that's just simply unsustainable for so many reasons. And so whether it is bans and some of the very first in the country when it comes to these forever chemicals, or making the investments after years and years of neglect at so many different levels of government, going back through Long Island history, and we are finally making real meaningful impact, not just for now, but certainly for generations that will come after us, to protect the integrity of the water that we drink and the integrity of our waterways, our pristine beaches and the open space preservation programs that we had implemented years ago and that we continue to be very aggressive on. And as much progress as we've been making over, say, the last two decades, it's still not nearly enough. And we can and should be doing more. And so one of the things that we had just done recently is go out to the public and ask for a public referendum for a multi-billion dollar bond referendum so that we can continue to make those much needed investments, not just on Long Island, but throughout all of New York State. It is those environmentally necessary infrastructure improvements that must continue to make in order to protect our precious environment for now. And like I said, certainly generations to come.
Well, your district in particular, I mean, when I grew up in Melville, there were a lot of farms. I mean, I remember Schmidt's Farm. I think it's the Ken corporate campus now. So there's been a lot of development on what used to be farmland. So I'm sure those people need clean drinking water and, you know, infrastructure to make sure that wastewater doesn't get mixed with that.
Absolutely. Well, I used to say, particularly Melville, used to be, you know, pumpkin patches and potato farms. And it has certainly changed. And as you know very well, right, Melville is the home to the Route 110 corridor.
Sure.
That's a far cry from pumpkin patches and potato farms. And so smart growth, controlling development, supporting it where appropriate for economic development, innovative housing. Of course, these are all top priorities, particularly for our young people and professionals that we want to keep here on Long Island, and certainly for our older neighbors as well, and everybody in between, all of us, really. But striking a balance is critically important and doing it in the right way. And so we're very proud of, one of the things that I'm most proud of going on literally as we speak, one of the very first bills that I passed when I was in the county legislature was a bill that really kickstarted, after 40 or 50 years of neglect, the planning process on determining where the pipes were going to go, on really starting or restarting what had been dormant sewer infrastructure in some of the most environmentally sensitive areas. And it took years and years and years to get that process going and to get it to a point where we had come up with a plan. Well, it's great, Josh, as you know, to have a plan, but then you have to have the resources to actually do it. And
the money.
And that means millions and millions and millions of dollars. And so having worked on that on a regular, consistent basis as a county legislator, when I was elected to the New York State Assembly, well, now you're talking, because now you are at the state level of government and much greater resources. And so one of the very first things that I did after taking office was I brought the speaker of the state assembly to Huntington Station.
Great.
To get a feel for the Huntington Station area as a community and talk about our priorities and to share in the vision of economic development and innovative housing. But we know we can't do any of those things unless you have the infrastructure to serve it. And so as a result of that meeting, I was able to bring back literally the millions of dollars that were necessary to make the investment in the necessary infrastructure. After all of these years and keeping an eye on the ball that we knew was going to be long-term, we've now broken ground and the pipe is literally being laid up and down New York Avenue as we speak.
Oh, terrific.
And so it's very, very exciting for our community, but I'm not going to lie, it's very exciting for me personally as well to see it go from vision and a lot of hard work over a decade's worth to now have a shovel in the ground where we know it is literally going to be a game changer for Huntington Station community, game changer for the wider township of Huntington. And when we talk about Melville and the change in scenery and the history, we believe that this project is not just a game changer for our local area, but regionally, and really serve as a model for other communities going forward, the way to strike the right balance between economic development and preserving the water that we drink and our precious environment around us.
Let's talk about the work that you're doing for veterans, and especially the focus on homelessness. Can you share the work that you're doing and what you're focused on there, and maybe a little bit about the Housing Our Homeless Heroes Act?
Sure, happy to. In Suffolk County, as you know, we are home to the largest number of veterans in all of New York State.
I didn't realize that.
And when you take the Suffolk region with the Nassau region as counties, that actually makes us the number two region in the country.
Wow.
So The veterans population is a very important to one for a lot of reasons. They are our local heroes, after all. And although we are very proud to be the largest, that also means that we have far too many veterans, our neighbors, our family members, our loved ones, that are suffering from tremendous challenges. And whether that is returning home after numerous tours and the impact of PTSD and TBI, traumatic brain injury, whether that is running into trouble with the law, be able to maintain a job or seeking job opportunities, so many challenges that our veterans and their family members face. And when I first came to office in the county legislature and I was the chairman of the Veterans Committee, you learn very quickly that homelessness or the in danger of becoming homeless any day was really a tremendous challenge that needed to be dealt with on an emergency basis. And so I wrote a series of bills that cumulatively we called the Housing Our Homeless Heroes Act, which was going to be Suffolk County's very aggressive effort in bringing an end to veterans' homelessness. And what had been a challenge for many, many years in coming up with this initiative, bringing together the professionals, bringing together the stakeholders, making sure that resources were allocated, working with our state partners, after just a few years and a lot of hard work, we had actually received our certification from the federal agency that monitors these issues that we had, in fact, brought about an effective end to veterans' homelessness. And it continues to be a challenge. And on any given day, there are far too many that still are not in a place that they can call home. But certainly the emergency level when we had first come to office had been addressed and continues to be a top priority in Suffolk County and Nassau County as well. And very proud of the fact that the Housing Our Homeless Heroes Act and some of the major elements to this day continue to be the model for the rest of New York State and even many jurisdictions across the country. It's
I
something that
love
we're
that.
very,
Do
very proud of.
you, yeah, just share a little bit about it. What were some of the parts of the act that helped these veterans? Like, was it money? Was it resources? Was it therapy? Was it building new affordable housing? What was
Yeah,
it?
it's a little bit of all of the above.
Oh.
But I'll tell you the real cornerstone that a lot of other jurisdictions became very interested in was at the county level of government, the county controls a lot of properties. These are properties that are dilapidated properties or are tax delinquent or, for a myriad of reasons are within, the county control. And so rather than, by the way, when I first wrote the law, this was also during economic downturn, after 2008, 2009. And so there were, the zombie properties, right? The zombie homes, and every single community had the vacant properties. There was no community that was immune. And so the thinking was, how can we address veterans' homelessness and clean up some of these vacant properties and turn them back onto the rolls or make them productive in some other way and protect the integrity of a neighborhood and property values along the way?
Nobody wants those on their block.
Exactly. And so we were hearing about both of these issues. Well, how could we be efficient? How could we be creative? And how can we get at both? So I wrote the law that now allowed the county level of government to take these properties and rather than give them over to speculators and maybe, price out, regular potential home buyers, rather than turning them over to the big funds. And we see a lot of that now, unfortunately. But to turn them over to proven not-for-profits that have a demonstrated expertise in providing services to our veterans and their families. And whether we were going to turn these properties over for individual home ownership or transitional housing or even emergency housing. And then, by the way, it didn't necessarily have to be a house within the middle of a neighborhood. It could have been a commercial property in the middle of an industrial area for a larger scale. And so over time, the county personnel were able to identify these properties that would make perfect examples for this program. And I can tell you, after a few years, we were able to cut the ribbon on a lot of these properties that were
I love
otherwise
that.
dilapidated, otherwise off the tax rolls, otherwise bringing property values down and turning over the keys to veterans, as they move towards home ownership. But whether it was individual families and home ownership or transitional housing or emergency housing or, all of the above and the services that go along with the idea of housing first has really, really made a difference. And so we've seen now over the years, and in my capacity now as the chairman of the Veterans Affairs Committee in the New York State Assembly up in Albany, I've been invited to tour several locations all around the state that are now following this model. It's something we're very proud of.
Listen, it sounds like common sense to me, but getting it done is not easy.
Exactly. Exactly
Can
right.
You share
and
a little...
even something that is so common sense and brings great pride to those that get the opportunity to participate, you would think it would be easier. And still, there are tremendous challenges, but at the end of the day, that's what makes it worth it.
Can you share a bit about what the Silver Alert system is?
Sure. Many of us have been familiar with the Amber Alert for many years, right? A child is abducted, an Amber Alert goes out over the airways, and we're taught, right, quite some time now, to be on the lookout for an abducted child. Coming from private practice as a young lawyer, working with some of the most vulnerable in our communities, our older neighbors, people, loved ones with disabilities, knowing that whether they were young or old, too many of our neighbors go missing for plenty of reasons, whether, dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's related dementia, and young people with disabilities who go missing. So the Silver Alert was our local effort in Suffolk County. That's when I originally had written the bill. That same information would go up on the boards on the highway or out on the internet or over the radio, so that there would be a role for all of us to play out in the community on being, on the lookout for some of the most vulnerable. So if we spot them, whether they were driving, walking, whatever it might be, we would have a description and can call law enforcement or, the authorities, identified and returned home safely. It was originally, and it was called the Silver Alert because originally it was for our older neighbors. It was so successful that many families and advocacy groups wanted us to, and we ultimately did expand it for younger people, particularly those with disabilities and special needs. And so it's been wildly successful through the years. We're very proud of the fact that Suffolk County was the first county in the whole state to establish a Silver Alert. And not too long after then, because of our great model, it then went statewide. So again, something that you would say, Josh, is common sense. It's not always that easy. But in Suffolk County, we're very proud of the fact that some of the common sense and some of the hard work and some of the real impact that we make does go on to be a model for the rest of the state.
Well, let's talk a little bit about drug abuse. I mean, it's a big issue. And would love to hear any efforts that you have, fighting it.
Yeah, particularly these days, the opioid epidemic that unfortunately we are all too familiar with and have lost way too many lives over the years. And these days, the synthetic opioids, today it's fentanyl, tomorrow it's going to be something else all, and it's constantly changing, it's constantly evolving, which makes a tremendous challenge for local law enforcement, federal law enforcement, and our treatment community, to stay on top of it. We are making great progress, which is good. And that has really been a matter of resources. Resources, particularly when it comes to prevention and treatment. And we have some of the very best professionals in the treatment fields right here on Long Island. It's something that unfortunately does not, it, unfortunately, it's necessary, but it goes unheralded that so many of the professionals here are literally writing the program, the playbook for some of the very best practices in this space. But we're also making an impact on the law enforcement side as well, giving the police department and our local district attorneys the tools that they need from an enforcement side as well. And they've been very aggressive in racking up the arrests, the big drug busts, which have, reached records. And that's good that they're able to do that. It's unfortunate that it still needs to be done. And so in great partnership with our local Suffolk County District Attorney's Office, who have been just fantastic partners here, we're working on a legislative initiative, the Death by Dealer statute, which finally will treat the drug dealers like the murderers that they are and send a very important message that the damage that they do will be punished at the appropriate level for the damage that they're causing.
Yeah, there has to be consequences, no question about it. You know, Long Island transportation and funding is critical. I'd love you to just talk a little bit about, how you're working on improving transportation and how it's really getting funded, everything from, I guess, the streets to the LIE to the Long Island Railroad.
transportation and infrastructure funding, Josh, is really a question that I deal with on a daily basis, multiple times a day. And that is whether Long Island is getting our fair share. And for the billions of dollars that are sent up to Albany, it is on an annual basis during the budget process, literally a battle for the 10th Assembly District, a battle for Suffolk and Nassau County in the Long Island region. And for far too long, it has been part of New York State's culture that Long Island just simply does not get our fair share. And you can really see that in the infrastructure funding. And if you're involved long enough, you come to know how the system works and where the work really does need to be done. And we've been pretty successful at that. And as Long Island representatives, we've been able to punch well above our weight recently when it comes to overall state funding. But here's the structural problem. That is that many of the infrastructure dollars are awarded on a formulaic basis, and it goes to regions. And Long Island happens to be in the downstate region. The problem with that is that the downstate region comprises not just Long Island, but New York City, Westchester, Rockland, and some of the other
Oh, wow.
relatively downstate counties. And so we are constantly treated, not just like the ATM, but as, the junior partner when it comes to our city region. And that's because that's where the infrastructure needs are. And that's because while they are wildly different than our needs out here, and of course, that's where the population is. And so that's the battle that has been fought for far too long on that playing field. I have recently introduced legislation that attempts to change that in a substantial way. This is a bill that we've been able to work with so many outstanding professionals and stakeholders, but Long Island representatives from both sides of the aisle and up and down the entire spectrum, which would allow Long Island to establish our own Metropolitan Planning Organization, or MPO, and pull Long Island out of the downstate region so that we can stand on our own and we can make the case that because of our population, because of our road mileage, because of the number of cars that we have on the road, that we deserve to be treated as our own region. We're big enough, we can fight our own battles, right? Between Nassau and Suffolk County, we have a population that's, well over, the larger, makes us larger than 25 states at least, right? But what we need is our own organization to be our own infrastructure and our own planning space to be able to do that. So we are hopeful that a Long Island MPO will not only put us in charge of our own destiny, but be able to get our fair share of infrastructure dollars. And that's critically important, not just for the state parkways, but as you point out, for our county roads, for our local roadways, because for far too long, and we have an example of that in Huntington right here, I've been able to bring back some significant infrastructure dollars that I've been able to allocate to the town of Huntington, let's say, or Oyster Bay on the Nassau side for local projects, local infrastructure, local vehicles that are necessary to be able to pave roadways and do the work that needs to be done. But we shouldn't live that way. Long Islanders deserve their fair share. We've worked for it, we've earned it, and we can no longer settle for a system that takes too many of our tax dollars and sends it up to Albany, never to come back down to satisfy our top priorities. That's what this initiative is about.
Man, listen, it's like everything else. You have to fight for it. Well, let's talk about the GUARD Act. It just got signed into law. That was something that you worked hard on, and Governor Hochul was here on Long Island just last week. Share a little bit about that, the GUARD Act.
Yeah, so the GUARD Act is GURAD, which is the acronym for the Governing Unaccredited Representatives Defrauding VA Benefits Act. It's much easier to say the GUARD Act. So the GUARD
Okay.
Act is New York State's very aggressive effort to crack down on criminals who poach pensions for the disabled veterans of our state. I'm not sure I can think of anything as low
I
as
know
it,
who could do
as
that.
but so many of our veterans, whether they be Vietnam veterans that were exposed to Agent Orange, or those that in Iraq and Afghanistan exposed to the burn pits for an extended period of time, or those even more recently that are starting to bring actions for serious illnesses while serving at Camp Lejeune. These are veterans that have served our great nation who are now suffering from tremendous health challenges. The rule is supposed to be that in order to represent a veteran in this kind of a disability case, you have to be accredited. You can't just walk in off the street. This is specialized training. You have to get certification. And that is the requirement. But the federal government, quite a few years ago, did away with any kind of penalty. So now it's a practical matter. Anybody that wants to make a buck off a veteran is essentially free to do that.
Terrible.
And the problem is, if it was taking too much of the earnings, if it was taking too much of the fees, that would be bad enough. The problem that we've seen locally across the country is that these criminals prey upon veterans in need, but will ask them for personal information. They'll gain access to their deeds. They'll gain access to their bank accounts and wipe veterans out. I mean, it's a real problem, and it could not be more disgusting. The GUARD Act is our, like I said, very aggressive initiative to criminalize that conduct, which had not been done before, to impose fines up to $10,000, which had never been done before. But also, I think most importantly, to raise awareness of this important issue that too many people, too many veterans and their families, and even too many advocates for veterans don't even know about. And so we believe that cumulatively, this is going to be a very impactful initiative to protect our veterans' families, the integrity of a program that is meant to protect the most vulnerable and crack down on this criminality that has been, you know, way too pervasive for far too long.
Well, listen, this is something that seems like no-brainer, again, legislation. And I want to thank you for joining me and really sharing what you've been working on and fighting for your constituents here on Long Island. So, Assemblymember Stern, thank you so much for your time and for the work that you're doing.
Josh, thank you.
Thanks for joining to the Schneps Connects podcast. And please subscribe wherever you get our podcast streamed on any podcast network or at podcastschnepsmedia.com.